Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. 10 people were killed in a plane crash in Jonglei State.
In just 10 minutes from here, according to the information that we had, one engine started, and then it was about to return back to the airstrip, so that other one stopped.
And South Sudan's peace partners blame the government for the slow implementation of the 2018 peace agreement.
Clearly, the agreement is not going. And the reason, of course, is the lack of political will.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. 10 people, including two pilots, were killed in a plane crash in Jonglei State on Tuesday. The director of South Sudan's Aviation Authority says engine failure might have caused the plane crash. The owner of the South Sudan Supreme Airline says his plane was in good condition when it took off from Juba. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from the capital, Juba.
Speaking today to South Sudan in Focus, Kurkwal, director of the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, says preliminary investigations show that engine failure could be the cause of the crash.
In just 10 minutes from here, according to the information that we had, one engine started, and then it was about to return back to the airstrip, so that other one stopped. So the plane crashed because the time was left, so we did not establish the real information, how many people were on, but no communication between the Thierry and Juba.
Qual says the commercial passenger aircraft HK4274, belonging to South Supreme Airlines, is owned by South Sudanese businessman Ayi Duang Ayi. The plane departed Juba yesterday morning en route to Pibor when it crashed at Pierre Airstrip in Jonglei State's Urur County. Jonglei State Governor Dine Jok Chagor offered his condolences to the families of the victims in a statement released shortly after the crash. Chagor confirmed all 10 passengers and two crew members who were on board died in the crash. Qual says investigators with the South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority are searching for the plane's black box, a flight data recorder.
Later on, after coming back of that plane, that is where we will give the accurate information how many passengers were on board and all that. What we may not get, that is what was the reason why the plane crash.
Ayi Duang Ayi, director of the South Supreme Airlines, says the plane was in good condition before the crash.
There is no airplane that is allowed to take off when there are technical problems. Captain can't accept to take off when he knows there are some problems in the plane. So we don't know what has happened with the plane. We will wait until we get proper information about what happened.
The plane was co-piloted by 38-year-old South Sudanese American pilot who received his flight training in the U.S. before returning to South Sudan more than 10 years ago when he began working for South Supreme Airlines. Duang says his airline will respect the findings of the investigation.
Airplanes are governed by laws. Every plane is under the national rules. Later, we shall find out the cause of the crash and who is to blame.
In March 2017, an Antonov AN-26 belonging to South Supreme Airlines was destroyed in a fire after crash landing at Wau Airport on a domestic flight from Juba International Airport. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Some parties that signed the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement are blaming the ruling SPLM for not implementing the deal. The leader of the National Democratic Movement says SPLM party headed by President Salva Kiir is obstructing the implementation of the agreement. The spokesperson of the SPLM in opposition also blames grantors of the agreement, including Uganda, Sudan, and Kenya, for not monitoring the implementation of the deal. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
The South Sudan Civil Society Forum says the transitional government's implementation of the peace agreement over the past year has been very limited and mainly elite-based and Juba-centric. The forum statement released this week says the agreement provided for the restoration of permanent and sustainable peace and security, but there is little progress to report. Lama Cole, head of the National Democratic Movement, a member of the umbrella opposition group South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says there's been little progress because parties were focused on forming national and state governments. He says security arrangements, which were transferred from the pre-transitional period to the transitional period, have yet to be realized because most soldiers have deserted cantonment sites after not having enough food, medicine, or health care.
Clearly, the agreement is not going. And the reason, of course, is the lack of political will from the side of the government in particular, the former government, the one who they call the SPLM-IG. They have not shown the seriousness demanded for the agreement to be implemented. Up to now, it's still, the whole parliament is still there. It has not been dissolved.
Akol says officials from his group have been advocating for reforms, but their voices are not being heard. He says President Salva Kiir must take action.
To dissolve parliament, the president must issue a decree, to reconstitute the parliament or the council of the state. The president must issue a decree. And I will be so continued to ask a question about the party. Yes, we may agree, we are all agree that it should be done. But when it will not be done, what can you do? And the guarantors, the countries that say they will guarantee the peace agreement, have kept quiet.
Peter Mayen, who heads the People's Liberal Party, a member of the umbrella group, other political parties, says little has been done because of lack of resources and other unforeseen events.
With the coming in with COVID, unexpected since the first week of formation of the government. This is also has delayed the process because the country was like partially locked down. Now again, COVID is back. So the council had not had enough time to deal with the situation.
Mayen says last year's flooding also affected implementation of the deal. SPLM-IO spokesperson Pork Both Baluang accuses SPLM in government of not having the political will to carry out the agreement. He also blames Uganda, Kenya, Sudan and other guarantors of the agreement for not getting more involved.
The guarantors, they should play their role to the agreement and protect it. Regarding any violations committed by one or some parties to the agreement, because this agreement has a solution for all the problems of South Sudan in different aspects.
South Sudan in Focus contacted the Revitalized Joint Monitoring Committee for comment, but Adol Mohammed, JEMEC Communications Officer, says the chairperson of the committee, the only authorized person to speak to the media, is out of the country. South Sudan in Focus also reached out to Information Minister Michael Makwe and the government's deputy spokesperson, both of whom declined to comment. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Still in Juba, land-related conflict is looming in parts of central Equatorial State. The South Sudan Police Service arrested 45 people this week for grabbing land in villages on the outskirts of the capital, Juba. Sandra Tombe, a PhD candidate at George Mason University's School for Peace and Conflict Resolution, says preventive diplomacy is the best way to address resource-based conflicts. She says authorities in central Equatorial State should act swiftly to prevent forceful allocation of lands in the state.
Government, as the authority in the state, has the responsibility to protect people, right? And if, as a citizen, I don't feel that my rights are protected or my property is protected, then that is a threat to my safety and a threat to my security and to my community as well. So the government, the most immediate thing it needs to do is to make sure that communities are protected and that their rights are not infringed upon by others. This, I think, is the immediate response the government needs to take. But long term, I think the issue of land and the issue of resources in general is a problem that needs to be handled structurally and administratively. Right now, we call on the state because that's the main authority in the Republic of South Sudan. But this should be a problem that could be handled on the state level, on the local level, right? And so you need those layers of governance that need to be in place to be able to handle issues like this. because we cannot always rely on the center to address issues that can be handled on a lower level. And I think part of our main issue is that it's very much focused towards the center, which is the seat of government, as opposed to being more decentralized. And I think that's where the solution to most of our problems come from. And
when you get out of conflict, it's very important to manage the post-conflict era. When South Sudan got its independence in 2011, a lot of issues were swept under the carpet. For instance, land issues. As a conflict analyst and an expert, what do you see missing in post-conflict South Sudan?
I think one of the main issues that were not addressed is the functions of power and the internal divisions within South Sudan. The main objective of opposition was the government in Khartoum, and that was our sole focus. And I think that was very detrimental for how the SPLM thought about its vision for South Sudan once it became an independent state. And I think that's where we lost a lot of the foresight that we could have had in terms of what South Sudan would look like. And so I think the fact that we focus so much on the center affects really how we're not able to nurture different regions within South Sudan where people can actually feel safe and feel secure to be able to live in their ancestral homeland, to be able to develop those regions. And so we tend to all look towards the center.
Talking about ignoring issues here, I spoke to one of the 10 chiefs who wrote a strong letter to the governor of Central Equatorial State, Emmanuel Adil, asking him to intervene. Or the chiefs said they will use other means possible or even mobilize their people to take back their ancestral land. You are talking about areas in Bilinyang, Tokiman, Rajav, Gumbo. How would you advise the government to be serious on this matter?
Some of the recommendations I can suggest, I was also listening to that video, and the message is that our communities in different parts will have to take up arms to fight land grabbing and people who engage in that activity. But I think actually that that could be problematic, because then that cannot be a response from every community to fight to be able to ensure that lands are not being taken unrightfully.
The issue here, Sandra, is that some of these land grabbers are armed and some of them are very powerful. The deputy spokesperson of the South Sudan Police Service told us that some of the people arrested were, armed. How would you dialogue with somebody who is armed?
You know, ideally, you do not want the conflict to get to the point of people engaging in armed conflict to be able to secure, to make sure that a community is secure or safe. So I understand that perspective, right? Because then you have basically imbalance of power, and for you to equalize that, then you have to engage in behavior that, the land grabber is using. So you have to basically acquire the tools that they have. But I guess I'm thinking more in terms of long-term solutions, right? Just taking up arms cannot be the solution to every kind of conflict that we come across. And this is not to say that at this particular point, maybe people are seeking that because that's the last resort, like you said. But I think the governor has the responsibility here to put some pressure on the government to actually take some action towards resolving this conflict for the time being.
That's Sandra Tombe, a PhD candidate at George Mason University's School for Peace and Conflict Resolution. In the second part of this interview, Tombe talks about the effects of structural conflict. She spoke with me from Washington. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how would the government of South Sudan pay its bloated cabinets? Stay tuned for an answer to that question right after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What kinds of infrastructure improvements are the biggest priority in your community?
I would like my roads to be improved because we are not comfortable with the roads.
I think it is hospital. It's hospital because I'm seeing people suffering with their kids, even mothers, they are suffering when they are pregnant.
park where children can play and where adults can also meet to hang out will be a big improvement.
For the government to do the street so that when people are driving, their cars cannot be bumping and all over. And the gutters as well, the gutters are full of rubbish and then it's choke as well. If they can clear the dirty things out, it will be perfect.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some analysts in South Sudan's capital, Juba, are questioning how the government will finance their new bloated cabinets. President Salva Kiir recently reconstituted state governments by increasing the number of officials. Parliaments in the 10 states will have 1,000 lawmakers and 350 constitution post holders. Government spokesman Michael McQuay says the expansion will achieve what he calls inclusive leadership. For VOA News, Wakes Simon Wood reports from Juba.
President Salva Kiir recently reconstituted state governments, vastly increasing the number of officials in state executive and legislative assemblies. The 10 state parliaments will have a combined total of 1,000 lawmakers, and each state will have 17 ministers, 6 heads of statutory commissions, and 5 advisors. In the national government, there are 35 cabinet ministers, 10 deputy ministers, and 650 lawmakers in the upper and lower chambers of South Sudan's reconstituted national legislature. Jock Madud Jock, a South Sudanese policy analyst and a professor of anthropology and public affairs at Syracuse University in New York, says there is no reason for expanding the government. He says the parties to the peace deal can still be represented in the unity government with far fewer representatives. Jock says it is unimaginable how the Kiir administration will finance such a huge government when civil servants have not been paid in months. The former senior South Sudan government official says unless leaders set clear priorities, the bloated government will likely lead to more corruption and poverty.
The government will now be struggling to pay salaries and nothing else. And the other is lack of investment in private enterprise and lack of investment in infrastructure. And when there is no infrastructure, there cannot be any business, so that private enterprise will not grow on its own.
Reja Gladys, a lecturer of economics at the University of Juba, agrees.
If people are unable to purchase goods from the market, then the business owners and are unable to pay their taxes to the government. And this will lead to reduction of the revenue for the government to provide the services to the people.
Jock says South Sudan's leaders must carefully map out the country's priorities and sources of revenue. If they don't, Jock says the situation will continue to be volatile.
And there will be no telling when the next round of conflict is going to be. If you have so many armed young men who are hungry and unpaid and have no prospects of how to feed their children, that is a recipe for the collapse of the peace agreement. And the idea that government should be made big in order to accommodate everybody is simply going to lead to further collapse and further chaos in this country.
Gladys says it is critical for the country's leaders to define their priorities.
The states should think about development of a strategy that will help to guide them implement their state activities, you know, within a given period. What does the state want to achieve? Say in 2 years, what are your goals?
The peace agreement has largely remained unimplemented. Over the past several months, government officials have complained about a lack of funds to implement provisions of the deal. President Salva Kiir appealed to the international community for funds to implement the deal. asked whether the unity government has now secured the funds required to run the revitalized transitional government of national unity or ORT-GONU. Government spokesperson Makwe had this to say.
Well, efforts are in process by the ORT-GONU in order to increase the revenue so that we can cover all this. So by the time when these parliaments are established, I hope by then we would be in a position to have the necessary resources to enable us to pay them.
Makwe says non-oil government revenue will help generate the needed funds to run the expanded government.
It's only the regulation of the proper tapping of the non-oil revenue, which is now moving very well. And even the oil revenue also, we need to keep it on check so that we are sure that what we receive is our share and so forth. In so doing, we'll be in a position to meet all our needs.
Analysts like Joker Madutu Joker remain skeptical the government will be able to do that. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan's Ministry of Wildlife says armed conflict and intercommunal violence has hindered its officers from accessing the country's national game parks and reserves. As South Sudan joins the rest of the world to mark the Wildlife Day, a spokesperson in the Ministry of Wildlife says South Sudan's natural resources could boost the economy and enrich cultures in the country. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Major General Kamis Adieng Ding, spokesperson of the South Sudan Wildlife Ministry, says ministry officials do not have full control of national game parks due to armed conflicts in certain areas.
At the moment, we don't have over control of protected areas because they're either encroached by people or the armed groups within the protected areas. So we cannot do our job in the way it's performed because of this, firearms are all over. Ammunitions are all over, so we are just working with a capacity of, let's say, 40%.
Ding says intercommunal fighting in Jonglei State and the Pibor administrative area has made it difficult to implement ecosystem protection laws. He says poaching is also a big problem, particularly in Boma National Park.
Boma is affected in a way that, laws are not implemented in the way they are supposed to be implemented. So the park is open for grazing, for mining, for other activities, which are adverse sort of human activities to the ecosystem of the park. So animals are also being hunted, are being poached, are being killed, because, this is also the effect of the conflict in the country.
This year's World Wildlife Day is celebrated under the theme, Forests and Livelihoods, Sustaining People and Planet, as a way to highlight the central role forest species and ecosystems play in sustaining the livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people globally, especially indigenous and local communities with historic ties to forested areas. Ding says Rizik Zakaria Hassan, South Sudan's new Minister of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, is enacting strategies to ensure wildlife conservation flourishes in the country. Ding says for the first time in years, game rangers will be deployed in game parks and game reserves to protect wildlife species across the country. Michael Opidia, a project manager for the Horn of Africa Environmental Sustainability and Resilience Project being implemented by the South Sudan Nature Conservation Organization, says wildlife species must be protected to ensure that nearby communities do not harm wildlife.
In the past few years, you find that populations of some species have really decreased. So we need to maintain, to develop the species so that they grow big. We should protect the populations through making sure that people are not poaching and trafficking in wildlife.
Lopidia says clear boundaries also need to be established so that people do not trespass in protected areas of Badingula National Park, Boma National Park, and other parks. He says wild animals and their natural habitats like forests can be protected by involving communities near protected game reserves by providing employment to local villagers to stabilize their food security so they are not tempted to kill wild animals.
We also need to protect the habitats of wildlife from destruction. There's a lot of charcoal burning taking place on commercial basis. There's oil exploration. There's cutting of poles. There's opening of agricultural lands. There's harvesting of timber illegally. So all those, there should be laws on how to harvest any other materials around the protected area so that we don't destroy the wildlife habitat.
Lopidia says the government also needs to integrate land use planning with development by carrying out environmental impact assessments before road construction and other development occurs, which will prevent the destruction of wildlife habitats or corridors. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments to our WhatsApp number +12026308011. We'll air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Kiledi Muzika with the song My Ngochoma, which means I'm alone. We've been listening to Kiledi Muzika with the song My Ngochoma. I'm John Trans in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Tonight.